It's Charles Barkley here with Wayfair. And let me tell you, game day is serious business at my house. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grill accessories, Wayfair's got it all. And it shows up fast. I'm talking fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game. And head to Wayfair.com to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on WEEI. Final hour underway. Already made it to the final hour.
Goes quick.
We're going to talk some Patriots now. We do have Bridget Prue joining us in studio at 10:20. And of course, I made a great impression this morning because as I was saying hello to her, yeah. I heard that we were coming back from commercial and I had to run away from her.
Oh, nothing in the hallway. Nothing like panic as a first impression.
I was like, oh, hey, how are you? I got to go back on air. Yeah. So that
I was rude and didn't come out of the studio. So you at least beat me.
That's true. Yeah. And actually, I mean, technically, I've met her before, but not a good Black Friday impression for Bridget. So hopefully she sticks around and actually joins us at 10:20. That would be nice. But do want to talk a little bit of Patriots here. We've talked a lot about where they're at. Coaching staff-wise, roster-wise. But this game on Sunday, I think, could be a pivotal one, if you will, because of all their games remaining on their schedule, this, I think, is the most winnable. Mm-hmm. Because you have Arizona after the bye. That's a team that's fighting to win the NFC West. You have Buffalo twice. They're going to be fighting for the number one seed. And you have LA sandwiched in between, who definitely will be fighting for a playoff spot, but potentially, depending on what happens with the Chiefs, maybe they have an outside shot to win that division the last couple weeks of the year.
Yeah.
So those teams are, A, better than you, but B, they're going to be going, to use a Red Sox term, full throttle to end the year. There's not going to be resting of guys or anything
like that. Right.
So this Colts game, I think, is the most winnable game you have left.
It's the one game where you're conceivably on the same tier as your opponent.
Sure.
All of the teams that you just mentioned, Arizona on their way up, looks like they're building their core now with Kyler Murray back and playing better. Buffalo, we know, you get them twice. And then Los Angeles under Harbaugh. Goodness gracious, has that guy established a culture in that locker room quickly.
Culture turnaround.
Yeah, and talk about a hell of a coaching hire when you talk about some of the better coaches that have been available. But Indianapolis is going through a very similar situation on offense where I would imagine their talk radio stations are having conversations of, well, do we believe in this quarterback? And do we believe in what this coaching staff is doing with this quarterback? I tell you what, though, John, Indianapolis has put on a masterclass in how not to handle a young quarterback.
I would agree. I mean, Anthony Richardson right now, he's completing 47% of his passes, which is abysmal. Yeah. He's thrown 7 interceptions. If you're into Pro Football Focus, they have him down for 11 turnover-worthy throws.
Not
ideal.
No.
And this is a guy that was, remember he tapped out for a play, and then he got benched for a couple games, which is just brutal.
Yeah.
But you're right. He had a 50% completion percentage in college.
Yep.
They draft him, basically start him right away when he's clearly not ready.
Right.
He gets hurt, basically throws away his whole rookie year, comes back. He's really not that much better now. Then they bench him. Then they bring him back. I mean, it's like that scene from The Office where it's like snip, snap, snip, snap, snip. They just keep bringing him back and forth.
Right.
It's like, so you're right. And I mean, if I'm the Patriots, I feel a lot better about my young quarterback than if I'm the Colts.
Have to. You absolutely have to. And that goes back to the college profiles that you bring up.
Yeah.
There's a reason that people were uncomfortable on Anthony Richardson and why him being picked where he was a surprise at the time.
I was surprised, I'll say that, yeah.
Clearly a very good athlete, but Anthony Richardson to me is the prime difference between passer of the football and thrower of the football. Yeah, he can throw it all over the field. It's going into somebody's hands. You just have no idea which team is going to catch it on any given time. Where Drake May has definitely shown more flashes of this guy is an NFL caliber quarterback. I just don't think Anthony Richardson is an NFL caliber passer of the football, and I don't think that he necessarily has the skill set in order to be coached to get to that point.
Yeah, and I look at like Bo Nix, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, rookies who I think are all ahead of Anthony Richardson.
No question.
And part of it is Anthony Richardson was a super raw prospect. I get it. And Drake May, look, he's got the most turnovers in the NFL since week six. Not without flaws.
Yeah.
But I agree with you in that you see times where you're like, okay, this dude gets it. Like, he can operate this offense. He can play. Like, that Rams game, I know he had the strip sack, and I know he had the interception to end it, and those were bad. But some of the throws he made and some of the drives, like that first touchdown to Kendrick Bourne, it was awesome.
Yeah.
Like, he's made some plays, and not just the one flash play here or there, but full drives where you're like, okay, they're on to something here. Like, early in the Jets game, before he got his concussion, he was going right down the field. Like, you're like, okay, they have something here. Whereas with Anthony Richardson, it's like, all right, well, he's already been benched once this year, was injured last year. Like, where are they really at with this guy?
Right.
And maybe he could be good, but, I mean, 47% completion percentage, that's like, that's just unacceptable for an NFL player.
And with an embarrassment of riches comparatively to the Patriots.
Jonathan Taylor, great offensive line. Pittman.
Right. Pittman, Downs, yeah. Pierce. Like, all three of those guys, I think, would be a number one on the Patriots, yeah. Just given what we've seen from each one of them. And it's an indictment on Richardson that Joe Flacco, at this point in his career, who runs around the pocket like he has cement in his shoes, came in and operated the offense as well as he did in fits and spurts.
And I would say Flacco, I was a little surprised he got benched because I think his last game he did throw three interceptions, which is bad.
Yeah.
But he threw for 272 yards, a couple touchdowns. I think he had won the game before. Like, he was playing better than Anthony Richardson. I don't know. And I get it. They got to develop the guy. They got to get him in. But when I look at this game Sunday, I think the easiest way for the Patriots to win this game, force Anthony Richardson to turn the ball over.
Right.
Like, the Patriots this year have not forced many turnovers. I mean, they had the Christian Gonzalez scoop and score the other day. But on the whole, they really haven't. So force him into a turnover or two. And I think of all the quarterbacks they've played this year, he's probably the most likely to give the ball away. And so if I look at how can the Patriots win this game, right? The most direct way, the easiest way, is force this guy to throw the ball.
Right.
And you'll probably get a turnover or two.
Yeah. As much as you can take the run game, or at least limit the run game for the Colts. Yeah. I feel like that, to your point, that's the best way. You don't even need to get pressure consistently. Get it where you can, force him into uncomfortable throwing situations, force him, you know, on his feet outside the pocket and whatnot. But you can almost bank on giving the ball to Anthony Richardson and allowing him to make the mistake without you needing to get consistent crazy pressure for four quarters in order for him to do it. He's that mistake prone. So as much as you can limit Jonathan Taylor, do it. You're also missing some weapons on offense. I included that in my trending, and I'll mention it in a moment again, how Josh Downs and Alec Pierce are both questionable and did not practice yesterday. So that limits his options further. So to your point, yeah, as much as you can force him to have to put the offense on his shoulder, the more you should be able to capitalize on that.
Are you worried about the Patriots defense at all, given how they played the last couple weeks?
Specific to this week? Not particularly. Yeah. I think this smells like a get-right game. I would certainly hope that it is, because you get one more game before you're extremely late bye.
Yeah.
And then you're going to have a tough go. You're going to have some tough sledding coming up over the next 4 weeks. So if you're not able to bottle up whatever happens in this game, take it into the bye and grow on it over the next 2 weeks, that's a major problem. I feel confident enough that even with some of their limits, some of your stronger players in the secondary can still have big days and just limit how much you see Indianapolis's offense on the field to begin with.
And I think one of the issues they had against the Rams and then the Dolphins is they got out-schemed by Sean McVay, Mike McDaniel. I don't think you have to worry about that as much with the Colts because of some of Richardson's limitations, but also they use motion way less than, like, Miami and L.A. use motion among, you know, there's some of the most in the league. I think Miami's number one in motion rate. L.A.'s, I think, in top five or six. Indianapolis aren't going to use nearly as much. I mean, you know, if I watch the Patriots on film, I'm going to run a lot of motions and see if they can communicate and figure it out.
Right.
But traditionally, they use less. I think that'll help. But yeah, this is a game that the Patriots defense should be able to play well. If they don't, we're going to have some real concerns when you have a Patriots Monday show with Hart and Arcand at 2 o'clock next Monday.
That's right.
But I think, to your point, this should be a game that That defense should be able to bounce back. They should be able to play well. And that, to me, that's the most direct path to winning. I don't look at, oh, Drake May's got to go out there and throw for 300 yards and three touchdowns. That would be great, and that would help. But I look at this game as, can your defense force a turnover or two? And can you bounce back against a team that, while they have good players around Richardson, I don't think they're going to be as complex schematically on offense.
Now, we're in the holiday spirit, obviously, so I don't want to go doomsday just for the sake of doing it. But say you lose this football game, knowing what you know about the schedule coming up and the fact that you're just going to get cooked for the next 2 weeks on microphones like these. What should the conversation be about the Patriots if for some reason you lose this game, and maybe to your point, the defense does let you down?
I think a big part of it is how you lose this game. Okay. Like if Drake May throw, because Drake May, I thought he played poorly against Tennessee, but he still has not had that rookie disaster game yet. If he throws three picks or he's really bad, and you, okay. But if you lose this game 35-28 or 35-20 or, you know, 28-7, and it's like, ooh.
And that, you get out-dueled by Anthony Richardson, essentially?
Then that's a big, that to me, that's a big problem.
Yeah.
Like, they scored 28 points against the Jets a few weeks ago, but it's the Jets. Like,
right.
That's a team that already fired their coach.
Right. And I think their quarterback is trying to fire himself right now.
Yeah. Why would I might have fired him, too. But, yeah. We do have Bridget Prue joining us next to talk Bruins. We've been waiting all morning for this. Looking forward to it. But before we get to that, it is time to trend with Dan Ball.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
All right, let's get you caught up on what's trending now on WEEI, and it's sponsored by Timeout Market Boston. The Patriots return to the practice field at 11:15, so in exactly an hour, as they prepare to take on the Colts on Sunday at 1 o'clock at Gillette. New England currently 2.5-point underdogs. One minor transaction from today, guard Michael Jordan was signed onto the Patriots practice squad after clearing waivers. He was waived earlier this week. 14 games on the NHL slate today, one of which features the Bruins hosting the Pittsburgh Penguins. Puck drop is set for 6:30 tonight at TD Garden. The game will air nationally on TNT and Max. Boston most recently beat the Islanders 6-3. The six goals tied a season high for the Bees offense. Meanwhile, the Celtics play their final game in group play of the NBA Cup tonight. I know we're all waiting on pins and needles to see who wins that. When they take on the Chicago Bulls, tip-off is set for 8 o'clock at the United Center. A victory over Chicago plus a Cleveland victory over Atlanta would give the Seas the Group C championship. And finally, week 13 of the NFL continues with a Black Friday showdown as the 10-1 Chiefs take on the 2-9 Raiders. Coverage of that game begins right here on WEEI at 2:30. Experience the essence of Boston's culinary and cultural scene at Timeout Market Boston, nestled in the Fenway. From live music sessions to food and beverage tastings and everything in between, Timeout Market Boston showcases the best of the city under one roof. I'm Dan Ball on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Bridget Prue joins us to talk some hockey up next.
It's Charles Barkley here with Wayfair. And let me tell you, game day is serious business at my house. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grill accessories, Wayfair's got it all. And it shows up fast. I'm talking fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game. And head to Wayfair.com to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Right after this.
Back here on WEEI, just after 10:20, John Lyons alongside Dan Ball in his debut fill-in show. He's still here, so that's a good sign for me,
I suppose.
Didn't
get fired yet.
Yeah, that's true. And joining us now is the one and only Bridget Prue. You can find her work on WEEI.com. Of course, the skate pod, the Sunday skate during the second half of the Bruins season once football season ends. She's pretty much everywhere on this station, on the website as well, covering the Bruins. Bridget, thanks for taking the time and joining us.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. Always happy to talk Bruins.
You notice how Bridget came in and she sat on the higher chair than the two of us? She's looking down on us
right away.
Just
asserting dominance right off the bat.
Yeah, I respect it.
You have to adjust my microphone and everything, but...
Joe, nice Thanksgiving.
I did. I had a great Thanksgiving. How about you guys?
Not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Not bad either.
Yeah.
A lot to talk about.
Yeah, I told Dan earlier that there was an election conversation at my Thanksgiving table. And it was funny because if you were just a casual observer, you wouldn't know I was the one who got paid money to talk on the radio because everyone was just talking over each other. So it was good.
You felt right at home then.
Basically.
Another day.
Yes.
Do you guys get asked your opinions on sports because of where you work? Or do you get people that give you their opinions because of where you work?
A combination, but sometimes I'm like, I don't want to talk about work. You know, come on. I don't want to talk. Yeah.
Yeah, just people asking me my opinion usually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They're normally on the same page. I have some pretty well-informed sports fans in the family, so.
That's good. Okay. I like that better. Yeah. It's much better than, completely understand. Yeah, no, I'll tell the hosts that. Yeah. Much rather have that than the other side.
Yes, thank you for your feedback.
I'll tell Andy. I know. I'll tell him of that about the Patriots. I got you.
So, Bridget, on the Bruins, now they make the change at head coach after that disastrous Columbus Blue Jackets game. I was in the building for that game.
Me too.
It broke their sellout streak. They played poorly.
I guess they readjusted it. Okay. I believe they just retabulated it and counted it as a sellout. So I guess technically they still have the sellout streak going.
There was quite a few empty seats there.
Yeah, there were. I wouldn't have been surprised if it did, but I guess they retabulate. I don't know how they do it, but yeah, they say it was actually a sellout, but it didn't seem full. I was there, and the vibe certainly wasn't as enthusiastic as fans have been in the past. So I wouldn't have been surprised at all. And I think if they kept trending in that direction, you would have seen the first non-sellout coming pretty soon. But since Sacco took over, I think they've been more interesting to watch. They're not perfect, but they are doing a few things better, especially defensively, penalty kill. That's making it more likely for fans to say, okay, wait, maybe they're getting back on track. Maybe we don't just abandon just yet. But yeah, hopefully they keep like this because it was really difficult to sit there and watch those last few games when Jim Montgomery was around. And I'm not saying it was his fault, but the hockey they were playing was just so hard to watch. And it felt like it was writing the same thing over and over and having the same conversation over and over. Power play stinks. Penalty kill's bad. Goaltending hasn't been good. Like, luckily, when they're winning, the stories are at least a little bit different.
So I want to follow up on that because Joe Sacco takes over, and in their first three games, they go 2-1, but they only score 3 total goals in those first three games. Wednesday night, they have the offensive explosion, if you will, 6-3. Of course, the Islanders, a banged-up team. When you look at the Bruins so far, 4 games in under Sacco, I know you mentioned defensively doing some things better. I mean, what are your initial impressions here? Is this kind of what the Bruins you expected to look like under Montgomery to start the year? Is it different? Like, where are you at?
I would say they're still not where I thought they would be. I still thought they would be better. On paper, they seemed like they should be a pretty strong team. I liked the new additions. I didn't realize there was going to be such a slow start out the gate and the energy lacking because we haven't seen that in the past with a lot of the same players still around. So I still don't think they're at where they should be or where they could be. I think a lot of them are underperforming. So the good news with that is if they get back up to their standard, you're going to be seeing a lot more entertaining hockey. But right now, they're stepping in the right direction.
On the topic of the offense, you've seen David Pastrnak grow into one of, I would say, the better pure goal scorers in the league. Is there anything that's jumped out to you, eye test-wise, in his game that just gives you cause for concern or things that have jumped out to you that look so different year to year?
See, that's the big, like, perplexing thing is Pastrnak because he works hard. And he's obviously naturally has the skill. It didn't just go away, but he hasn't been able to finish the same way that he has this year. I think maybe it's somewhat of a confidence thing.
Okay.
And also, it kind of just gets compounded when pucks don't bounce his way.
That's fair.
Like, he had an empty net goal the other day taken back for a high stick. Like, he high-sticked it out of the air. And it was, and it didn't, you know, it broke the rules, whatever.
Yeah.
But I feel like just stuff like that. It would have went in. It would have counted. Like, the stats go up and his confidence goes up and just silly things like that could help him get back on track. But I've said this the other day. It felt like in that Vancouver game, the Bruins heavily outplayed Vancouver, but it was like there was a force field at the goal line. That, like, the puck just, we were living in a universe where the puck wasn't allowed to cross the line and they had so many good chances and it just wouldn't go in. And it felt like a snake bit and like just this big accumulation of being snake bitten by multiple players.
Well, momentum's such a fascinating thing when it comes to goal scoring, where say that one does go in. Now your head hits the pillow that night. All right, I scored. Now I at least get it, even if it was just you deflected a puck in. I got
sometimes
the feeling,
you get one that hits you off the butt and it goes in and you're like, great, another goal.
And that's the one that gets the monkey off the back. But conversely, if you're not scoring for, and you're known for being a 30, 40, 50 goal scorer and you're not doing it, I would imagine it could be just as much mental as it is physical.
Yeah, and pressure certainly on him. I think Brad Marchand started to really kick things up recently, though. Like, since the coaching change, I think Marshawn's done a good job leading on the ice by example.
Yeah.
Lifting the energy. He had two goals not last night, because we didn't have any hockey on Thanksgiving. So on Wednesday, had two goals, the first two goals of the game, started things off in the right direction. And he's been kind of leading the way and making everybody feel comfortable. I think he wanted to make Joe Sacco feel as comfortable as possible, taking over the role as well. He gave him the game puck after his first win, even though Korpisalo got the shutout, gave it to Coach. So I think he's been handling that really well.
So you're around this team all the time. So I want to ask you, from the outside looking in, sometimes it's appeared to me that among the players, there's a little bit of a leadership void. And what I mean by that is, you know, you look, a couple of years ago, they set the regular season record for wins, okay? You have Bergeron, who's Bergeron, right? But you have Krejci. You also have Nick Foligno on that team. You have guys that have been around for a long time, captain-type material. Marchand was more, from a leadership perspective, kind of an ancillary piece of that, right? Like, not a non-leader, but you have Bergeron, you have Foligno, you have Krejci. And even go back to the last time they made the cup. You have Chara, Bergeron, all the list goes on. Tuukka had been here forever. Now you have Marchand, but it feels like, all right, is he, and I don't want to say he's not captain material, but he's new to the captain role. It hasn't really been his traditional thing in his career. And that level below him, yeah, Coyle's been here a while, but he hasn't performed up to standards. He doesn't have the stature of a Krejci or a Bergeron or guys like that. Same thing with McAvoy. He doesn't have the stature of a Chara or a Boychuk or a Seidenberg, to go back even further. Do you sense that a little bit, where either from the captain level or that second tier, that there's a bit of a leadership void and that's contributed to some of these struggles?
I think they could certainly benefit from the addition of a leader. And we had this conversation on the Skate Pod in our last episode about the Rangers potentially trading Chris Kreider,
who would be a
good leader. I know, he's had somewhat of a down season as well. The Rangers are in the same spot as the Bruins. They're trying to make the playoffs. They're right at the bubble right now, just like Boston. And if you had a hockey deal where you send maybe a guy or two to the Rangers, you get Chris Kreider, like maybe adding someone like that could help your offense. You know, we've talked about ad nauseum in the offseason and in the season how they're missing a top six forward. They're a top six forward short of being a cup contender. That would solve that, and that would also solve the leadership issue. But I do think that Marchand, he's obviously has a very different style of leadership than Bergeron. He is going to get on you if he thinks that you're not working hard enough, and he'll lead by example as well. And he's not afraid to say if you don't deserve to be here or you don't deserve to be on the power play or things like that. I think it's the secondary stuff. I think it's the secondary group where I do see Charlie Coyle being a leader in the locker room. I do see Brendan Carlo doing that as well. And I think when they're on the bench, they're communicating really well. But I think that in that middle role, like, because those guys aren't the oldest, right? They're in their low 30s or their high 20s. I think Coyle is 32 or something like that. Yeah. They're not quite at that same level as some of the actual veterans that you think of when you're talking about leaders.
So you mentioned the Chris Kreider thing and how that would help their offense, the leadership void. But to get a guy like Kreider, there would be significant pieces going the other way. Do you feel like if they struggle under Joe Sacco in the next couple weeks or so, is that kind of the next thing that would happen, that they would trade off what we may view as a core piece, a foundational piece, whether it's for Kreider or somebody else, but they fired the coach, right? So is the next thing like a McAvoy, and just to throw his name out there,
probably not that big,
but okay. So like, what would it be?
Thank
what would
God,
it look
by
like?
The way.
Yeah. what would it look like?
I would think it would be more like a Brendan Carlo. Like, you're probably trying to add a forward and from a team that needs a defenseman. Like, you're probably trading off one thing for the other. So you might be looking at like a Brendan Carlo going the other way. But the problem is right now with Hampus Lindholm hurt, you're already kind of thin on defense. So that makes it more risky. Maybe you wait till Lindholm gets back. But if you feel like you need the infusion into your lineup right away, you take the risk.
For my money, one of the things that's been a consistent issue, we talked a lot about the scoring when we were talking Bruins earlier, and we did that earlier this week as well. You just haven't had that second wave of of young players that have been able to come up and supplement as Bergeron retires, Krejci retires, stuff like that. So have you seen any signs of life from some of the baby bees, so to speak, that gives you hope for the future?
Well, last season we saw it, and I know Matt Potter's back in Providence right now, but I think he has a really bright future.
Yeah.
So he's somebody that I've been wanting them to bring back up. I know that the philosophy is have him do some development in Providence, but I don't feel like they have the luxury to keep him there when they might need him for their offense. They've lacked creativity, and he's one of the guys that actually can do that. But I think Mason Lorai has shown good signs in the right direction. This season, I actually thought he would look that he maybe would have taken a bigger step forward.
Sure. He popped in that playoffs against Florida. I thought he popped.
Yeah, one of my season predictions was like Mason Lorai is going to just blow people away, and he hasn't done that yet.
Yeah,
there's still time, but I think he has it in him. And Johnny Beecher, a good fourth line player. So there's those guys. If you mean like below them, I'm still not sure about Fabian Lysell.
That was going to be the next name I brought up.
Yeah, because he had an interesting camp, and I think that some of the sentiment is that maybe maturity isn't quite there to take all the coaching and to translated into the NHL, because I mean there was times where he showed off his skill really well in the preseason, and there was other times where I thought he was taking shifts off. And so that's a lot of that is a maturity thing. It's not that he's tired, it's that mentally he's not pushing himself. So whenever he's ready to do that, maybe he'll be an infusion into the offense. He could be a top six guy, but he's not there right now.
Anthony Richardson got to be tired and take a playoff, and they just threw him right back in.
He got two games off, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
but tired I did enough like, not to play.
And
good.
To Bridget's point, though, and we're talking with Bridget Prue of WEI.com and the skate pod here. Like, I felt like they sent Lysell down in training camp early. Like, I don't
earlier
was that
than
just,
I was expecting.
Yeah, that was. I was like, oh, they're already sending Lysell. I thought he was going to get a real shot to maybe even start the season with the. Yeah. I don't know if I was over hyping or over expecting, but it just felt early.
No, I think that it felt like he at least had a closer chance. Yeah. Like even among us, we're thinking like, oh, he might hang there right till the end and make it a tough choice.
Yeah.
But I think it comes back down to how they feel about the player's personality and maturity, rather than necessarily about his play and being able to work into the system and be part of the team and integrate better. I think that they're waiting for him to still learn a few things in Providence in terms of that.
I mean, from a culture and game plan perspective for the Bruins, when you're a young player, you're not just going to sit up on that top line and score and not have to back check or kill penalties or anything like that.
And that's kind of the problem.
Yeah.
That's the problem, especially when you have a skilled player who's expected that in his career so far at lower levels. And he comes in and he wants that time. And I watched him in the preseason get absolutely nailed by Nikita Zadorov.
Ooh.
He was not ready for it. He wasn't braced for it. I don't think he saw it coming at all. It wasn't a dirty hit either.
Yeah.
He just had not played against that kind of player before.
Yeah.
Like, he's not used to the...
He wasn't ready to get checked
by
an NHL defenseman who checks somebody in that situation.
Who wasn't going to let him off the hook just because it was an inter-squad scrimmage at Providence. Like, they were playing a real game. He was playing just as hard, and I think it was a wake-up call for Fabian, who was not expecting, like, to get fully checked at the end of his shift by the biggest guy on the team. And I do feel like there was a little bit of a message sent with that. Like, hey, go as hard on him as you'd go on anyone else in a real game because he's got to get there.
Yeah. Right.
You mentioned Nikita Zadorov. A lot of money invested in him in the offseason. I think expectations are coming in. Bruins fans are going to love this guy. He's going to be physical. He's
going to
be tough.
Your next Big Z.
Yeah. So far, really a disappointment overall. I mean, why is... Because taking a lot of penalties, there's been turnovers, not really much offensive impact. I mean, why has he come in and just not risen to the level of his contract or what our expectations were?
He's really interesting to me because I feel like his heart is completely in the right spot. I feel like he's a really good teammate. I see the frustration on his face every single time he makes a mistake, especially if it ends up with a goal and he goes over to the bench. Like, the body language is always really upset with himself. Like, he puts it on himself for sure. I think that the issue was early on he took so many penalties, then he got hesitant to be physical because he didn't want to keep taking penalties. Mm. The irony is that last game he scored out of the box. He scored an empty net goal because he got a penalty and came out at the right time and scored, which is kind of funny. But
just as he game planned it.
Yeah, that was his first goal as a Bruin.
There you go.
Because he hopped out of the box. It kind of makes perfect sense. But he'd been getting all these penalties, and some of them were his fault. Some of them are because you're the biggest guy in the NHL, and they always caught, like, even the penalty he came out of the box and scored from. He didn't really do anything.
Right.
So some of it is when you're a bigger guy, you get the calls against you.
Yeah.
But if your question is about, like, is he going to find his way, like, find his footing?
Well, I hope so, right?
Like, yeah. Well, that's the problem. Like, they thought he might be playing on the top pair with McAvoy. And I don't think that's
kind of what I thought coming. I mean, again, unless I was naive, but
that's what you paid him for.
The money invested, the pedigree. I was like, this him and McAvoy would be the guys.
Yeah, it hasn't looked as good as McAvoy with Lauri or Lindholm. There's other better options. Not that you can't use it. I think that every guy on the left side of the Bruins defense, you could rotate through. But I do think that Zadorov Peak pair has been on the ice for a lot of goals against. And a lot of times you're noticing one of them's missing coverage or what have you. So that's the biggest thing is if he can just lock it down 5-on-5 defensively, then you can deal with some of the other mistakes, but they're also not shutting things down.
We've all admitted in a certain sense that the Bruins may not be where we thought they were going to be to this point in the season, but within the context of the Eastern Conference, are they still a quote-unquote power to be reckoned with? Where do you kind of see them within the matrix of the East?
Like a sleeping giant?
Yeah,
I don't
sure.
know. They might be, but their goal differential is also... They're the only team in the playoff picture right now on the East with a minus goal differential, and they're very minus. They're minus 18.
Yikes.
Which they were the top goal differential team two seasons ago, and they've always been way in the plus. And now you're like, okay, well, somehow they're still in the playoffs, and if they can just get everybody up to that level, like Pasternak.
Yeah.
And Zaka's starting to kind of get there, but they need Coyle and Frederick to get there. I don't know if I'd necessarily say they're a sleeping giant, but I do think that they're a playoff team. They're built to be a playoff team. They are. Yep. If Swayman starts to do what he's been doing a little bit more recently, then you're safe. You're not a powerhouse.
Right.
But you're hopefully safer than bottoming out and missing the playoffs at the end of the year. Like, if you can just be a little bit more consistent, we're at that Thanksgiving mark.
Yep.
So they're in the playoffs right now. Barely. Yeah. But they're in the playoffs.
Technically,
big caveat.
And Bridget, we've been talking to you for 20 minutes, and you were the first person to just bring up Jeremy Swayman and the goaltending situation. So before we go to break, I do want to ask you that a lot of bad performances this year from Swayman, whether it's that 4-0 loss to Nashville when they were winless, the Carolina blowout, the Dallas blowout, that Columbus game that ultimately Montgomery got fired after. Now, in his last couple games under Joe Sacco, he's played, I think, a lot better. Obviously, the Vancouver game, he didn't face many shots. But is he back on track? Because I think that's been a major disappointment this year, how he's played. And part of it's been the defense in front of him, I know. But is he going to be able to get back to the guy that is making $8.25 million a year?
Well, actually, after the Vancouver game, I talked to him in the post game, and he was talking a lot about how for the team, practices have been better, so everybody's kind of looking better. So the practices have been more intense. And I asked him, is that the same thing for you? And he said, yeah, him and goalie coach Bob Asenza had a mini training camp, which I thought people would be a little bit more mad when they heard him comment that because he missed training camp intentionally, holding out for a contract. But he said that he had his own little mini training camp and trying to, I think, more than anything mentally, be here, like feel like he's there, didn't miss anything, and going. And I think it's worked so far. And even in that Vancouver game, he only gave up one goal. They just couldn't score. Yeah. So, yeah, he looks better. And Korpisalo looks really good.
I think he
looks better than expected.
Ever since opening night, he's been pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, really.
I was a little bit surprised, but he's been making more of those, like, for to put this in, like, an advanced analytics term. I don't know if you guys like the nerdy advanced stats, but he is much better in a lot of the advanced stats than him, including expected goals against. Like, he's up in the positives. Like, he's saved more goals than expected, and Swayman is below. So, like, Swayman has let in more goals than a league average goaltender would have.
All right. She is Bridget Prue of WEEI.com, the Skate Pod, Sunday Skate, basically anything involving Bruins in WEEI, you can find Bridget Prue. We will be right back to wrap up the show and do a little Boston sports Black Friday shopping, Dan.
Love
Hopefully
it.
Bridget will join us for that as well, but we'll be right back to wrap up the show.
Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Hey guys, it's Daxton.
And Hayden from Blondies Out Loud.
And if you've ever thought about starting a podcast or making money from one,
we use Creator Lab from Odyssey for our show, and it's honestly been so easy.
It's free hosting, and it gives you a really simple way to earn on top of whatever you're already doing.
Which, of course, we love because it just adds another stream without the extra work.
So, if you're a creator or podcast curious,
check it out at creators.odyssey.com.
Go after this. Really back here on WEEI. Jackson, I don't even know what that song is. So.
You don't like Queen?
Okay. All right. No, I know who they are. I don't. Jackson, so Bridget, you haven't been here yet until 10:20. Jackson started us off at 7 a.m. with heavy metal, and
okay.
That was like the first three
rejoins.
They
didn't ease you in.
We were easing out, actually.
That was the double cappuccino. Yeah. That was everything
was like,
you needed at
right.
7 a.m.
Yeah, I was like, welcome in Dan Ball. Like, here we go.
Like, I'm fired up to be here, John.
I know. So Jackson's been really mixing it up with the music today.
Hat tip
to Jackson. Great job today, by the way.
Thank you. Yep,
absolutely.
Thank you. You got to mix it up.
Before we go, a little special segment here on Black Friday. Dan and I want to just do a little Black Friday shopping for the four Boston teams. Bridget will help us with the Bruins as well. One item that these teams could each get that would really help them, not just now, but for the future. Let's start, Dan, the Boston Celtics. What do they need on Black Friday shopping?
Boy, I don't even know if there's a physical piece that I would buy for them. So I will just go with patience. Because the regular season's long. You're eventually going to get to the playoffs and be in a really good spot. Don't do anything hasty. Don't lose focus. Be patient. You'll get there. You'll try to defend your title.
Yeah, just buy him another duck boat.
Yeah.
That's all they need. Look, for me, it's...
buy him a big old ring.
For me, it's health.
Yeah.
Right? And I know you can't necessarily buy it. Just health.
Yep.
If you stay healthy, I think you're the best team in the NBA. I think you'll win a championship this year. So health for me. So that's an
easy one. Can we be specific to Porzingis?
Yeah,
please
put Porzingis in bubble wrap until mid-May.
Yeah,
that's it. Porzingis, Tatum, and Brown. Put him in bubble wrap till mid-May, and then I'm fine. Yeah, but yeah, health, especially with Porzingis.
Yeah,
for sure. Next up, Dan. This is a little bit more challenging. The Patriots.
Oh, jeez.
You know what? I'll go first.
Please.
The key word, what I wrote down in my notes.
Yeah.
A lot. So for me, though, key thing here, and there's been a lot of debate. Do they go receiver? Do they go tackle in the draft? I think it's a new left tackle. We're talking about 39 sacks allowed, the fifth most in the NFL. They've allowed 185 total pressures per Pro Football Focus.
Right.
Just to give you a point of reference, Philadelphia, a team with a good offensive line, has allowed 122.
Wow.
Detroit, a team with a great offensive line, they've allowed 106. So you're way above the good teams in the league. Also, when they've run to the left side of their offensive line, they're averaging less than 4 yards per carry running the ball. So it's been bad pass protecting, bad blocking. My number one thing for them, Black Friday shopping, give me a new blue chip left tackle.
I'm totally fine with that, and that allows me to use my number one thing on Black Friday on a number one. The number I heard this week, Drake May, 10 touchdowns, 10 different receivers.
Okay,
I challenge you to find a young quarterback who has come into the league without a certified number one receiver and been able to take that step up to the elite category where you're hoping Drake may not get you, but can at least approach. So is that through the draft? May not necessarily be this year. You don't quite have that Marvin Harrison player, but if you can get your hands on a T. Higgins, hopefully more like a DK Metcalf, somebody who you know can carry the load of that true number one receiver, I think it does wonders for your quarterback.
Yeah, for me, I think that comes via trade, and DK Metcalf's the name. I've been on him for a while now. I think you could get him for that second round pick, and that's a team that just drafted a first round receiver a couple years ago in JSN.
Yep.
Also, don't sleep on Deebo Samuel. So they paid Ayuk. They just drafted Ricky Pearsall in the first round.
Yeah.
They're going to have to pay Brock Purdy. Don't sleep on potentially Deebo Samuel.
Don't hate that one bit.
Or Metcalf.
But see, these are like longer, farther away. These aren't stuff we're buying
today. Yeah, we're not
today,
getting that today.
Right?
Yeah,
like,
yes,
we're not getting this today.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
If I were to take this in a different direction, I would say get them nothing because just don't even bother
Hole
right now.
In their stocking from Bridget Prue.
Don't even bother. Wow.
Get them beer and a lot of it, but it's for your fans to make it through.
Get her on sports radio for 20 minutes. She's already going negative.
Yeah, yeah,
well, hey,
you're natural.
Get a higher pick. I've worked here for 6 years. I think I've absorbed
you're negative
too much.
Enough.
Yeah.
Hey, but it's Bridget. In fact, you're not wrong. Yeah, you're not wrong at all.
They don't deserve a damn thing right now.
We are going to get to the Bruins in a moment, of course, with our Bruins expert, Bridget Prue. But let's go Red Sox first, Dan. Black Friday shopping for the Red Sox. What would you get? Because now they actually can shop on Black Friday. What would you get them?
Well, the obvious answer is the player that we've talked about ad nauseum today. If I go player specific, I'll go off of Juan Soto and I'll say Max Fried. I think they have money to spend. He's proven that he can be a front of the rotation caliber pitcher on a proven contender. I know that there are some concerns with issues, and I think he's a ground ball pitcher, and people go, well, you have Devers at third base. You can't bring in a ground ball pitcher. Don't worry about that. They'll handle that too. I will go pitcher in Max Fried. And for my overall concept, you can call it intestinal fortitude. You can tack on an S to the end of my last name. Get some confidence for this ownership group. Have the confidence to prove that you're a big market team and go act like it this offseason.
And hopefully, as we discussed earlier, Theo Epstein's the guy.
That's right.
Bring some of that in. For me, I'm going to piggyback off what you said. It's a frontline starter. And really, I say two frontline starters. Last year, 57 quality starts, 15th in the major leagues. They actually had fewer than that even the year before. 10th most bullpen innings pitched as well, as we discussed earlier. So your starters aren't pitching well enough throughout the year. They're not going deep in games. Your bullpen's getting taxed. And let's not forget, you're the Boston Red Sox. You can bring in a couple frontline starters.
So I would hope.
I would love Juan Soto. Like I said, if they signed him right now, I'll reach across and give you a hug. But the frontline starter is the bigger need.
100%.
Like, even if you sign Soto, it's got to be a frontline starter.
Quietly, you're also losing Kenley Jansen. Need somebody at the other end of the pitching staff there, too.
It's a fair point.
Yeah.
Let's go to the Boston Bruins here, and let's defer to our Bruins expert, Bridget Prue. One thing Black Friday shopping the Bruins could bring in.
It depends how conservative you want to go. If you actually...
Are we conservative on Black Friday,
Dan? So I already suggested in the last segment, like, a big move would be Kreider. Like,
sure.
That's that caliber. Like, he's a captain. He is a leader. You're going to need to give up probably 2-3 pieces to get someone like that. And you're going to have to... you know, take pieces off your active roster. That is a aggressive move.
Yeah.
So that, but it also is one that maybe there's a fit for.
Yeah.
If you wanted to go a little bit more conservative, you probably don't have to give up a whole lot to get Taylor Hall back or add a middle six guy that can infuse life into the offense. And he's on an expiring contract. It's probably only going to take a 4th, 5th round pick to get him. Or maybe, you know, I don't think you're going to have to give up a whole lot. So somebody like that, you could bring in pretty easily. No harm, no foul. He's liked here. He can help with some of the scoring, hopefully, if he stays healthy as well. But I think that to just put a label on it, middle six forward.
Yeah. And I think Hall's a guy, we talked about that secondary leadership, that Hall's a guy that fits that perfectly for me. I had a couple goals
he's
the other night.
Very, very well spoken.
For sure. What do you got, Dan, for the Bruins?
Oh, boy. Well, I love the middle six, but I won't copy that because that's bad radio. So instead of that, I will chime in and say, I got to pick one really quick. I'm going defensive depth. Steer into what's made you strong already. Hopefully you can get that internally, and it's a guy like Lauri, like we talked about, that can step up and take shoulder more of the load. Hopefully Zadorov can live up to the contract, but just steer into what's made you good these last number of years. Defensive depth. If you got to win every game 1-0, I'll sign up for that.
For me, goal scoring win. Pasternak, as we discussed, 8 goals total, only 2 this month, which is the most on the team, those 8 goals. However, I think he's 49th or 50th in the league, so you're way down there as far as scoring on your wing. They're second to last in goals per game, so give me some middle six forward. If he can score, fine. Just somebody on the wing that can score goals. So
somebody that breaks that force field.
Which
us out of this alternate universe we're living in.
Dan, it was an absolute pleasure today on your first ever fill-in shift. I know, I think your 4th day total working on the radio here for WEEI.
Amazingly enough.
Great job. It was an absolute pleasure working with you today.
John, right back at you. You made it easy to make a debut, so Thanks for being here. I'm hoping it's the first of many.
Yes, some have called us the most handsome duo in radio. I don't know who said that, but some have.
I don't know. The Twitch cameras are off today, so they must have some good kind of intel.
We don't want to break them. Yeah, of course. Bridget, thank you so much for joining us for these two segments. And if you do not follow Bridget's work out there, you need to follow Bridget's work. She does a tremendous job for WEEI Radio and WEEI.com and the Skate Pod as well.
Thank you, guys.
For sure. Thank you. And Jackson, of course, with the eclectic musical rejoins in your lead today as well. Thank you so much. Great job.
Onward and upward, fellas.
All right, that'll do it for us today. You have Mego and Fitzy coming up next. Also after that, you have Black Friday NFL football here on WEEI. So stay tuned. Like I said, Mego and Fitzy coming up next.
Oh, I love turkey on Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
I'm Tobin Heath.
And I'm Kristen Press.
We're World Cup champions, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Week in and week out, we sit down with sports legends, cultural icons, and global changemakers to talk everything from clutch games to causes that matter.
This is about creating the future of women's sports, a future that's honest, inclusive, and real.
Join us for our reimagined journey. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.